Welcome, everybody, to a new episode of Musicast, the music podcast where we don't really talk about music, but why these songs are so amazing and they made some kind of impact in our lives. To all of our listeners and viewers, because we're going to be in YouTube pretty soon, remember to follow us in our social media. We're in Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and probably we're going to start getting in more and more, so you can connect us anyway. Also, remember, we have two Spotify playlists. We have Musicast's playlist, where you can hear and enjoy the songs that we're going to mention in this episode, plus all the other episodes. And Music Mornings is a playlist that I update every day with songs that I use on my way to work, so you can enjoy it at any time. These episodes go live every Tuesday at 7:30 a.m. and we're going to have Musicast in Spanish that is going to be published on Thursdays at 7:30 a.m. That's pretty much the introduction. And for this week, I have a fellow podcaster, an internet writer.
You're just going to be seeing my voice, right? Even though I'm waving to myself for no reason at all.
No problem, because this video, it helps. I'm hoping.
The brain, the movement, and then the audio. I got it. Yes. No, so why am I talking to you? Why am I talking to you anyway? What can you give me? I'm still.
Don't worry. This video, I'm hoping actually that probably by next week it's going to be on YouTube as well. Which.
Oh, it might be. Okay. How do I look? I'm sorry.
You're fine.
Is my hairpiece on? Okay, I didn't. Yes. Anyway, thank you very much, Peter or Pedro, for having me. I'll speak my Spanglish, but I'll probably make your brain go become coercive or something.
Oh no, don't worry.
But I'm glad you're happy. I love talking about music and everything. It affects everyone's lives and everything. Music therapy, happy. You don't have to, you know. I think Paul McCartney was talking about how music therapy helped people with autism and everything. But music therapy helps anybody, anytime. It can change your emotions like that.
Important. Thank you. No, and again, thank you, Adam. Let's have an excellent episode. I know we will.
Okay. What are you drinking? And what's in that bottle?
It's a beer. It's a Miller Lite for today.
Miller, come. How old are you? Come on. Are you a real man? Miller Lite. You're too young for that.
It's Monday.
And I guess you gotta go to work, do something.
Yeah. I mean, normally I like to go with rum.
Oh, there. Now we're talking. I have it. Like I said, I have a Latin background in the sense I lived in Central America and South America. My wife is from those countries. Her friends would drink rum and dance all night. My wife is kind of like me, though. I have better rhythm than my wife. I don't know where she came from, actually. And she doesn't drink, so she didn't fit in with her friends.
Oh, no. She needs to step up with the rum game because
she's a cheap date. She has two light beers and she falls asleep when we're slow dancing, so it doesn't work out.
Oh, my God. Well, no. Anyway. Normally, I have a rum, but for today, I decided because it's a Monday that we're recording, let's go light. Let's keep it simple. With just a Miller is enough. But, well, you heard a couple of episodes, you know, pretty much. So do you want me to start with my song?
Yeah. You start, you dance, I'll lead. Let's go. Yeah.
All right. So the song that I decided to go to, you probably know it. The one that I chose is Breathe in the Air by Pink Floyd.
Yes, many times. Okay. I'm older than you. I've in high school, in college, under substances I won't name, possibly listen to. Yes.
Yes. This is from the famous, or I would say, actually, is the third most sold album in the whole history, Dark Side of the Moon.
Yes.
Which used to be the second one until TikTok made famous again the Fleetwood Mac album. Because of
Rumors? Which one? Rumors?
Rumors, yeah.
Rumors. Oh my God. We are going back to the past and let's forget about the future. But when you say sold, is it units sold or actual CDs or albums?
Units.
You're kidding me. People, I didn't even think people even bought physical CDs or units. I mean, I thought everything was streamed now these days. It's like you had to have in the 70s, if you didn't have that, or Frampton Comes Alive, you weren't certified to be, you know, an American, you know, growing up, or United Stadium, or whatever you want to call it. Yes.
Yeah.
High point.
It is. And it actually was like the 20 rumors. But after TikTok and this personality who became I forgot the song, Dreams, made it viral. It just got this new thing, and it took down Dark Side of the Moon from number 2 to number 3, which still for 1973 and still being in the top 5 of the most sales in the whole world.
What does that say, though? What about today's music? Or just we have so much access to any type of music? Because what about making new music? What about a new Dark Side of the Moon or something? But
I wish. Imagine another Dark Side.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I watch MTV, at least, you know, the regular MTV, not MTV Classic or VH1 or whatever. The music seems so wimpy. I mean, and I don't stream it. Just there's nothing rocking. There's nothing catchy. I don't even know. Yeah.
And when I think that a song became famous again or is getting something, you notice that the sample is from something already made. They use so much inspiration that you can tell, oh, this is from the 70s, and they're just putting something new to make it their own. Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Of course, I mean, that's why I don't believe in this musical appropriation. I mean, Chuck Berry said a long time ago, I don't care. There's only so many notes you can use in music. I just want to get effing paid for, you know, those people got ripped off, you know.
Yeah.
You know? Elvis would just, you know. But he took music and made it his own. Yeah, if you can make it your own, great, and do something with it.
That's
I can dig it, but there's no, I don't know that, like, Nirvana is like the last happening I can think of, like a musical,
yeah,
you know, some musical Ben, you know, or something that I can think of.
I think you're right. After that we had a couple of boys bands, but nothing really.
Yeah, the commercial success is cultural. Maybe the cultural icons affect a lot of people, but in terms of musical change, a new direction, I can't think of anything really.
No, not really. And this is why I chose this song to talk with you. Because Breathe, I heard it in the 90s, late 90s, beginning of the 2000s.
You look 18. What are you talking about?
I'm 27.
Oh, okay. A little bit old. Okay.
A little bit. Come on. 10 years at least.
Yeah. Do you ever write a check? Do you know what a check is? I'm just joking.
I know.
So anyway, yes. Okay.
I saw them on the internet.
Well, don't write too many. Anyway.
Yeah, this song is... It was something that made me change the perspective that I have until that point with music. I would say, because of course it's psychedelic, the whole album. It was difficult to choose a song from the album because I would say it's just one long song.
Yep.
If you have it or if you're streaming it, you don't know when one ends, which one ends and starts the other, because it's just like a whole opera of mystical music.
Yeah, I mean, it's like mystical, great, elevated music, maybe aided by substances, or not. And at the time, it was really cutting edge. And I remember people turning it on to me, you got to listen to this. And of course, you kind of had to like it or say it was cool because it was so, even if you didn't understand it, it was different. It was so different and everyone else was into it.
Yeah.
And then maybe when I got a little older, I think, not that I'm a music aficionado, I think people explained to me why it was different, how they use, even the instruments they used, how they used feedback and stuff they did in the studio. Then you could have appreciate kind of how revolutionary it was, and then it got airplay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why that happened in the 70s, and it hasn't happened again, because I mean there are the masters. Or would you say that it's just a coincidence that these musical geniuses, let's say,
I think it was such a small world. If you go back to London, from what I've read and talked to people into music in the 60s, it was like the founding fathers for the United States. You had like 25 people together in London, you know?
Yeah.
And they all came together at one time. Rock and roll was not modern day popular rock and roll was not that old, like say in 67. Elvis broke through in 54. You had TV, for the first time, TV sets were all over the United States. Yeah. And then this guy Elvis comes. He's the first like pop star maybe since, maybe Frank Sinatra is a proto pop star. It's first serious pop star, but something revolutionary, something different, something that really got kids going, something that parents were afraid of. Racists were afraid of it. You know, people thought this is race music and is it going to cause black and white? And then 12 years later, these minds who grew up more in England, who listening to blues and stuff like that, they're all together. And I think it was just, they needed each other to push themselves, use their creative minds. And they didn't have to worry about, you know, about groupthink. There was no groupthink. They're just doing stuff. Something. There were no rules.
Yeah.
Which, you know, sometimes can stop you from thinking, I think, progressively. And then, yeah, so they festered together in a way.
Yeah.
It would have been amazing to go back in time, you know, hang out in 67 swinging London or something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's one of my wishes that I can never make, you know, being a Pink Floyd concert.
Yeah, if you take hallucinogens and maybe you can do it. No,
maybe.
No, but one thing though, too, a lot of those British guys, a lot of them went to university, which was hard. I mean, there's a big class system. So they went to university and they were in art schools and everything. So they kind of had that solid art. I call it I'm tired. You know, that Dolly mindset, you know, yeah. Like John Lennon had it kind of. If you look at Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, he's painting a picture. Very Dolly-ish, very exact, very crazy.
Yeah.
And then the music itself, which is very trippy and very, yeah.
There's no way that they made this album or a bunch of those albums that has transcended time sober. You can tell that for sure. They were onto something. We don't know what, or maybe so many substances at the same time, but.
But they were creative. They had that, you know, genius or something different. It's hard to quantify. When you get it, you have it. You don't know how long it's going to last, but they broke through. They break through, and they have those couple years of just Pink Floyd. And now, you know, yeah, now they broke up and everything. And now it's more like a nostalgia tour to me. I mean, don't forget, yeah, it's good that new like yourself, new younger people are finding it. But when I hear it, it's like it's just remembering. Yeah, something great, an artifact. It's still relevant and it holds up well.
Yeah. So where were you when The Dark Side of the Moon got out?
I have a very classical story, probably universal story. It's my brothers who turned me on. I was younger than them.
Okay.
But my brother would take my Partridge Family album or the Monkees or something like that. I listened to AM radio.
Okay.
Which is a lot of people don't even know. And he goes, you have to listen to this. Adam, listen to this. And then I go, wow, we're tripping and stuff. That Dark Side of the Moon with my brother. He was a musician. He still is. And he was into that stuff. He would listen to FM music. He would listen to music where there wasn't a commercial every 5 minutes.
Right.
And everything. And that was like cutting edge. That was cool. And he was a little snobby, you know, like you listen to them, you just don't know. You know, kind of stuff. So that influenced me. I had my Elvis moment. When I say that, something you hear people say, when I heard Elvis for the first time, it changed everything, how I wanted to do music, how I wanted to dress. My brother put on Led Zeppelin 2 for rock and roll. That was like, it was like Hammer of the Gods. Mm-hmm. You know, that was just, I can't quantify it. I can't describe it. It was rocking.
Right.
And, you know, I still like AM. I still like cheesy love songs. I still like One Hit Wonders from that. But that's rock and roll. And then he turned me on to Hendrix.
Nice.
And that was just like from another world, you know. Excuse me while I kiss the sky. What the hell?
Yeah. That ring your bell. Something happened. Something.
Yeah, clicked. Yeah. This is different. This is heavyweight. I think Ozzy Osbourne once said it best. I can't define it. I can't tell you. It's just, it's rebellious. It rocks and it gets me going.
Yeah. Yeah. That's rock. That's for me.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where you're into light rock or a little bit more commercial. Whenever you have that feeling, that's your band and that's what you're going to love.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Which takes me to the question. What would you say is your favorite genre?
I never have a favorite. I have a favorite movie at the time. My favorite this favorite genre would have to be pop and rock and roll.
Okay.
And rock and roll. Good pop and rock. And I also, you know, I'm not a snob. Even if I'm not into certain type of music, I can still appreciate the crafting, like Taylor Swift. I mean, she gets my catchy hook. I have that saccharine catchy hook in me. And also I got to appreciate the fact that she has, in my opinion, a formula, a marketing plan, and she does quite well with it.
Yeah.
Like, I appreciate that. I don't have to like buy it. I mean, it's not really aimed towards me. I don't think anyway, that type of music and stuff.
All right.
But yeah, rock and pop still. And which I don't, And unfortunately I don't, in today's music, I haven't heard a lot that really got me going.
It's
do you find the same thing, or the, and I know there's so much, it's such a fractured media. I mean, I know people, I met some kids, listen to people on YouTube I've never heard of, who are strictly right. YouTube stars.
I'm starting to encounter that there are some musicians out of YouTube and they stayed in YouTube and they're artists, and I mean, I don't get them. They don't get to my algorithm. I started to listen to Spotify a couple of months ago to try to get more and newer artists. And I don't know. I always go back to the classics. And
yeah, same with me. I thought about being lazy. I'm not pushing. I'll go back to the class. It just didn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's, you know, that's the problem. In some ways, they said the internet's great because we're going to have access. There's just too much there. You can't, it's all, I mean, I have to give up after a while. You could go on forever.
Yeah.
And everything, you know, and people should be listening to us on the internet. That's the problem. But, yeah, so I go back to what I like. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. My groove thing, my rock thing, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Yeah. And now I want to go to the second question that I like to ask everybody. And you already mentioned that your favorites always evolve and are constantly changing. But I ask you this off camera, what would you say are your three favorite artists or bands, singers?
Okay, it would be Elton John, mm-hmm. Led Zeppelin, and probably, the third can keep changing. I went through a Neil Young period, you know, I like Nirvana in the 90s. And everything. Right. I was dating a girl like Wilson Phillips, so I listened to that. But, you know, and in the 90s. And then my wife is, again, she's an Ecuadorian, but she's in a gringo at heart. I'm not saying the people, of course, now Music Universal. When she was growing up, she loved the 80s, you know.
Okay.
She loves it. And so in the car, like I'm in Maine right now. I live in Princeton, but I'm in a house up in Maine we have. Anyway, my point is, we drove listening to her. She put a whole thing of the 80s together from Phil Collins on up, you know, you name it. You know, Phil Collins, what else? Who else did she? She went through a Phil Collins fest from the 80s. So I'm like, my God.
All right. I'm going
to. She was like 10.
I'm going to keep with Nirvana because I want to create something here. Let's see where this goes.
You're doing like a Rorschach test of my musical life? And
pretty much. And let's say you have then Led Zeppelin, Elton John, and Nirvana. You have to choose. And do you know the game Fuck, Marry, Kill?
Who you would sleep with? Who would you kill?
And yes. Who would you, yeah. And who would you
meet? I wouldn't sleep with Elton. I'm nothing against gay people. I wouldn't sleep with Elton John. No. Not my thing.
All right. So he's
even he's too old for me. Anyway, he's joking. No. Okay. I like it. Okay. I like this irreverence. I can dig it. Let's go for it. Yes.
Okay. So you have Zeppelin, Elton John, and Nirvana. And I think you just kill Elton. You killed
Rocky. Yeah. Yeah. Well, who would I? Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, so I have to either fuck them, kill them, or what?
Led Zeppelin, Elton John, Nirvana, fuck, marry, kill.
I guess I'd have to marry younger Robert Plant. He was a Celtic rock guy. He came down from the heavens.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another. Ooh, we can have so many episodes talking about Led Zeppelin as well. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then by default, you have to sleep with Nirvana, which.
Oh, my God.
It's an interesting.
That would be bad. I mean, I mean, Courtney, I love, or Kurt Cobain. I'd rather go for my dog. I don't, especially well, she's sober now, but back, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So could you imagine their breath? I'm not, heroin and not eating a lot wouldn't do well for foreplay.
Yeah, no. Well,
I maybe kill Elton. Just have to kill Elton. You know, I've got to follow the rules. Elton would have to die.
Yeah. Poor Elton, yeah. But well, so we have Nirvana and Led Zeppelin. Now let's make it this way. Imagine Kurt Cobain's still alive. We still have Robert Plant. So what would you rather? To still getting more and more Led Zeppelin albums as good as the one that made that change in you, or to have more and more albums from Nirvana? If you have to choose.
Oh, we have to go Zeppelin. You know, Zeppelin's the template for hard rock, heavy metal. I mean, yeah. And they weren't really doing it. I mean, In Through the Outdoor was like their last album, and that was pretty lame, actually. I think they're running out of steam at that point. Now, they did some other things together, but if they could really get together, recharge their batteries. Like, in my opinion, the Rolling Stones haven't made a this is so old. Talk about geriatric. They haven't made a real Rolling Stone album in 30 years, you know, even though they put them out, you know.
No,
but I would love, that would be nice if something, I mean, to capture that thunder again, like Guns N' Roses. I mean, oh yeah, how can I think Guns N' Roses? I mean, I went 1 year listening to that album every day of my life, you know.
Okay, so what would you put Guns N' Roses in between these three, Led Zeppelin, Elton John, and Nirvana, if you had to take one out? Well, I think Led Zeppelin staying there no matter
what. Yeah, I'd put the Gunners second, really. I just remember, yeah. I mean, their body of work is not that big, but what they did, whew.
Yeah.
Use Your Illusion was pretty good. But the first album, that was one of those albums, like my brother liked a band, my older brother, a band called Boston in the early 70s. That was the beginning of what we call it, Stadium, you know. Okay.
Yeah,
you
remember. I remember. Of course.
That was like the beginning of, you know, Kansas, Boston, Stadium kind of power rock, kind of, you know, AM-ish, but still good enough for the radio. So, but he would play that thing. I played Guns N' Roses when it came out. I played that album, almost every day. I played, and every song to me, it's one of those albums you want to, every song was fine. No throwaways for me. Oh, no, it got me thinking again. That's why I need David Bowie, major influence in aesthetics and everything. Bowie went through many, I mean, still did before he died.
There's
emo period in the 70s. I got a friend of mine with his girlfriend turned me on to Eno and Robert Fripp because of Bowie. Kraftwerk, bands like that. Do you know them? I don't know if you know them or not. Bowie, Eno, Kraftwerk.
I try
to do surveillance on you. Are you sure you're not a plant from that Hugo Chavez? Who's the dictator in Venezuela now? What's his name?
Maduro. Nicolás Maduro.
Are you sure you got some plant from Maduro? Because I tried to do some background on you and I couldn't find much.
No.
You didn't send you to Miami to spy on the rest of the refugees or anything?
No. We have a bunch in here, but no, I haven't.
Anyway, yeah. I mean, Bowie, it's amazing. Bowie did so many. You know, he's kind of like the Beatles from 64 to 69. Bowie's gone through so many chapters.
Yeah. He was constantly changing.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I mean, and again, you have these two decades, probably, let's say 60 to... Let's go up to the beginning of the 80s. And those are the legends that until this day, we say they are the ones who made it all.
Yeah, template.
You have Sinatra, of course. You have the King, Elvis, which my aunt, she's in Chile right now. She's fan number one of Elvis. She made me listen to every record. She made me watch every concert. There was
Even Fat Elvis?
Yeah. Yeah.
Farting Fat Elvis, sweating profusely. You can't make that up. That's the classics. I mean, you know, fame, fortune, and just horrible. I mean, he lived it. I mean,
dude, I'm telling you, I was like 9 years old and I didn't want to watch Elvis, even the good concert, because I remember that story. I was like 9, 10 years old and she wanted to watch Elvis from Hawaii.
Was his comeback, right? Yeah.
And it's a good concert. I mean, it's fine. But I was 9 years old, you know.
It's kind of like Tom Jones-ish, though. You know, he tries to. Yeah, exactly. He looks slim, at least.
Yeah, and I'm like, I want to go. I want to watch a movie. I want to play games. And she was like, "I'll bake you a cake and buy every snack you want if you watch it with me." Okay, sure. We're watching Elvis.
What did Elvis ever do for her? No, I guess, you know, I guess a lot of women have told me, though, that Elvis had this charisma, no matter what. But, he was the first proto-punk. If you see, when I'm tired, I get tired. When he did Jailhouse Rock and everything, that movie, that was kind of punkish. And I saw some early films, early video of him in concert. He was smashing guitars. He was, at a brief period, he was an alien. He just came from another planet, the stuff he was doing. And he put socks in his crotch. He was humping the guitar, breaking things. And snarling he was different.
Yeah.
So yeah, but by the time you saw him, even me, we knew the legend. You could like the songs, but it didn't have that cutting edge that you know people felt in the 50s when they saw him.
It's
you know. And I also got a little tamer, you know.
And we can continue to talk here from legend to legend for...
We forgot the Beatles. I mean, what can you say? Yeah, really, yeah. What about Louis Riguel? My wife and I just watched on Netflix the drama.
Oh, really?
His life was crazy. I knew who he was, but not. I didn't realize he was so huge.
Yeah,
because he didn't really record that much in English. I didn't realize that the guy is like kind of Elvis-ish.
Yeah, he's Elvis from Latin America, pretty much.
Right, but he also did boleros or something. My wife said that she never liked them until he did them and stuff.
He changed the formula, and he was that. He was that idol that everybody... We were watching the concert yesterday with my wife as well. We're just like, Luis Miguel? Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, the guy's reached iconic status. Yeah, man, even I know. And then we watched the miniseries. He had a crazy life. I didn't realize the stuff he went through and his dad. And he's actually American from the United States. He was born in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, yeah.
We can claim him and everything. But he did a duet with Frank Sinatra. It's unbelievable. This guy's done everything too. Anyway, am I ruining this interview? I'm sorry, I'm talking.
No. And I enjoy this, my friend. So, and again, we have so many legends to talk about, but I think this is the time that we listen to breathe in the air.
I'll breathe to in focus.
And well, anybody who's out there, this is the time to grab a good pair of headphones and listen to Breathe in the Air by Pink Floyd, and we'll be right back.
Oh, yeah, you can listen to that a million times. It's like a soundtrack to some different parts of your life. You know, it's meditative. At the same time, it's a Rorschach test in the sense, what are they talking about? What do they mean? You can overanalyze it, you know.
And it has so many meanings. That's what I think. Depending of your mood, depending of the time that you are in your life, it's a psychedelic song that you don't need to be on any psychedelic in order to enjoy.
Perfectly it. Said. You don't. It puts you in that. Yeah. And if you just close your eyes, you start seeing. What you want at the time, what you want it to be. Yeah. That's what you're a genius. That's what makes it memorable and timeless.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's why this song and I chose this one for you because when we were talking I noticed the influences that you have.
Right.
So it was like, yeah, he has to know the power of this song. Right. And I mean it's just too much. I
think. And it also brings me back like smells, trigger like memories. Mm-hmm. That song triggers. I can remember like certain times where I heard that in certain places, like it was yesterday. Then, like I'm back there in a way. It is like transporting back.
Yeah,
how I felt, the people around me and stuff. And yeah, it was cool. And also, it was like cool because it's like it was kind of our music. If we're doing it with friends and everything and listening to it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy. I'm happy that you have to experience that again. And this takes us to the next part. What do you have for me? What do you bring to MusicCast, my friend?
What, you want me to sing?
If you want to sing, what song do you have for me?
Oh, I didn't bring a song to play. Oh, I'm an idiot.
No, it's okay. Oh. We used it from my Spotify. You chose a song.
Okay.
Purple Haze, remember? You sent that to me.
Oh, how about this? Could you find Dolly Dagger by Jimi Hendrix, Rainbow Ridge? Soundtrack from a movie, Rainbow Ridge, and Jimi Hendrix did most of the soundtrack.
Oh.
Why did I pick it? It just happened in the moment. It's the second Hendrix song I ever heard, I listened to. My brother turned me on to Purple Haze and then this song.
Oh.
And it was just raw. It was raw. And the feedback. Hendrix did a lot of stuff. Now with a little more sophistication, understanding, and reading, it's a lot of crazy stuff with the guitar that no one did before in terms of feedback, the wah-wah pedal, Echoplex. Also, I didn't realize he was left-handed, so we had to turn the guitar until we got especially one made for him. He just turned it upside down, different direction to play.
Yeah. And Jimi Hendrix, for me, it's one of the biggest, I think for anybody, they say he's the biggest guitar player of the whole time, like the greatest one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, put it this way, he's like, I guess you like soccer, Maradona with the, going the full length of the field.
I'm
with
not
the ball.
Into soccer.
Oh, I don't know if you saw, I saw that where he went against Argentina. Well, that was one play where he went like 80 yards or 80 meters with the ball. Basically, it was just like there's some place at times where I saw Hendrix on film at Woodstock, and I think the guy was incredible. Just what he was doing, it was just like incredible.
Were
I can't
you
believe the person was doing it. The stuff coming out of his guitar, yeah.
Were you able to be in a concert with him?
No, I know. Actually, no, people saw him at Woodstock. No, but I saw like at midnight movies we used to go to when I was in high school. They would show like, you know, I think it was Woodstock, and then I think Hendrix at Monterey Pop Fest, one of those, and they showed him, and it was just incredible. The stuff he got, just the sound he got out of his, it was, no one did that before. The dexterity in the music, besides I liked the music too. And then he did the acoustic version of the Star Spangled Banner in one of those. It was wild. Yeah. And then he almost made like a war, like, and you know, he made like machine gun sounds and fireworks. It was incredible. I still thought, you know, is this like fake? Is, you know, are they piping in it someplace else, amping this kind of music? But he did it all with his guitar and his wah-wah pedal and his head and his brain. Yeah, it was pretty, yeah.
I have heard too, I love Jimi Hendrix. I'm not going to say I'm an expert of his discography, right? But he's one of those guitar players that he doesn't really need to sing. You can take out the vocals from the song, and it's the guitar that is the one who does the singing.
Yeah. No, I can dig that. I can get it. But one thing too, he had that raw, he wasn't like an amazing crooner or singer, but he had that raw voice that went with it. Also, to me, being somewhat of a rockologist, you could see the influences he had. He's like Little Richard, you know, Little Richard from the 50s. When looking back, it must have freaked out a middle America. Now we understand that guy was a screaming fag, no pun intended, but, you know, but he had the makeup and everything. Oh, tutti frutti. But Hendrix played with it. Hendrix was in Little Richard's band, but he, you know, he borrowed that influence. That James Brown too, the look, the showmanship, the moves. The guitar, though, God, it's everything. You know, you could all even see some, you know, gospel thrown in.
And probably, you know, there's a story. Probably you have heard of it, that there was a concert, and I think it was in Woodstock. I'm not really sure, or very close after Woodstock, that Hendrix and The Who were going to play in the same festival, the same lineup. And they were fighting prior to the concert who was going to finish, because right. Hendrix didn't want to play after The Who.
No, I wouldn't. Yeah, no. Any musician wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, and The Who, they didn't want to play after Hendrix because right. They were in this still struggle. So for some reason, Hendrix won, and he was going to finish last.
I think that was definitely Woodstock, right?
Yeah.
He said, "I'm walking." He said, "I go last or nothing at all."
Yeah, and then the Who just destroy everything and try to, you know,
be the heart rate possible, right.
To try to make it like, okay, we had the big finale, and then just Hendrix puts his guitar on fire.
Right. The voodoo. And a friend of mine's friend who was there said everyone was kind of, it was muddy. There were, you know, people were, there was bad trip. People, some people had bad acid. They were tired. People were sick. But he said Hendrix single-handedly woke everyone up again. They didn't think, they thought it was over. They couldn't, all fatigue had set in. They couldn't really get their rock thing going, but he brought them to another sphere. And then, yeah, setting everything on fire. That was just crazy, right? Yeah. There's another famous story that gets copied now. Sly and the Family Stone, which were pretty big at the time. He was famous for being temperamental, not wanting to go on. And he basically, he said he wasn't going to go on. I forget why. He didn't like the time he had to go on. He wasn't being paid enough. But then the promoter said, I'll get my friends together. If we can beat up your band, you go on. If your band beats us up, you don't go on. So they beat up Sly and the Family Stone. They pummeled them enough, and they went on. Classic rock story.
Yeah. Why, though? Why our classic rock stories always have to do with violence, fire?
because it is rock. I think rock and roll is rebellion. The music is kind of rebellious. It is kind of like a... Some people would describe it like a large erection. it is. And also the insanity. Drugs had come. Don't forget, rock and roll started merging with the counterculture and drugs.
Yeah.
That was that period, too. And people, you know, Sly was just probably, you know, coked out, crazy, cantankerous, and nasty. And that was a compromise the promoter came up with. They're desperate to get him on because he was really famous at that time. They had a couple hits and everything.
I mean, it's amazing. But Would you say there's any other genre that is so related with drugs at the same time? Because I know you, I know with hip hop, you always, because of the same lyrics, they mention drugs, but you don't get that with pop. You don't get that with blues and jazz, but they will steal on there.
Blues, you get alcohol. A lot of that's like, your life, you're downing your blues and alcohol. But yeah, no. Yeah, yeah. That's why the Beatles always said undeservedly that they created the acid culture and everything.
Yeah.
But Frank Zappa once said, come on, it's just me. I mean, who knows? He just said it's just music. I wrote a song about, you know, brushing your teeth and dental floss sales didn't go up. But I don't know.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned, you just make me remember something from Hendrix. You know, as my regular job, I sell cars. I sell used cars.
And you're kidding me. You're a used car salesman. I'm not saying, aren't they supposed to be gently used? No.
They're supposed, you know.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful, man. No, I do.
I always say, and this is a joke my wife hates, because every time that we go to a party or something, oh, what do you do? I'm a professional liar. And people say, like, well, I'm a used car salesman, of course. And they were like, oh, right.
But I bet you're good at it, though. You're friendly. You seem honest and approachable. I'm sure you don't BS people.
Right? Oh, yeah. When necessary, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, okay. hey, people need cars. They can't, you know, they have to pay what they have to pay. They can't always pay. It's kind of like, you know, a win-win. I look at it that way. You get a car, I get some money. You don't have to pay full freight. Hopefully it lasts a couple of years, you know?
That did sound like a couple of years, a couple of weeks, who knows? But I had a customer and she did a trade-in and we had the car for probably like 2-3 days there. Nobody looked at it. So I remember I had a couple of days off. So by the time that I go back, I said, no, that's a trade-in. I was like, sure, I'm going to check it out. Did somebody do anything to the car? No, it's there. I opened the trunk. There's a original LP from Jimmy Experience. Nirvana Nevermind, original from 1992. And there was one more, the Dave Matthews Band, and in perfect condition.
Vinyl?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Yeah. And I still have them. And I'm like, why? Like, did somebody call? Because as a person who appreciates music, I say, this is rare. In the conditions that they are, you have to call the customer, because she might need them, she might love them, you know, they're important, and they're not remastered, they're actually from...
You are honest, you didn't find the closest, you know, independent record store and try to sell them, or go on Amazon?
Right, and when we called them, she was like, oh no, they were my boyfriend's, you can keep it.
Wow, could care less.
Bloop. And they're now in my living room, and I enjoy them every once in a while, so...
You have a stereo player? You have a real...
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I'm building my collection. Actually, I got Dark Side of the Moon, the original one, on eBay. It was...
A friend of mine, who is a real record, you know, a musicologist, he works at something called the Princeton Record Exchange, one of the last serious, you know, besides probably New York or San Francisco, independent record stores. And he says, he says vinyl, you know, vinyl does justice to music, and DVD and CDs don't. Mm-hmm. And some record should not only be heard on vinyl if you can. Yeah. And like you said, Dark Side of the Moon, definitely, it's one.
Yeah, and I see it. If we were listening to it on Spotify, you can hear that they have 100 plays, millions, 100 millions of streams. And yeah, cool, but that's right. When you hear it on Spotify and then you hear it on vinyl, totally different.
It is different. I go to his basement where he has a collection and everything. And at first I'm like, oh, you know, you're just exaggerating. You're just trying to sound profound and deep. But it really is a difference. When he educated me, listen to this, listen to that. It's more enriching. It's like the difference between McDonald's and a really, you know, a cow that's fed real feed and sauteed and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you want to hear your song?
Yeah, you got Dolly Dagger. Again, a good beat. People, you know, even Jimi Hendrix aficionados might have forgotten Rainbow Ridge, but this is just raw Jimi Hendrix.
Okay.
So let's go for it. And I'll shut up and we can play. I won't say anything.
Perfect, perfect. So ready to get a good pair of headphones and listen to Dolly Dagger by Jimi Hendrix, and we'll be right back.
That was Dolly Dagger.
Oh my God. It's been actually when I got to the chorus, it was like 10 years since I heard that song.
You have heard it.
Yes. Before. But
yeah.
My God, I feel like I'm 16, 17 again. It's been a long time.
I'll tell you when I first heard it. Yes, but yeah. And I'm sure Hendrix met some high priestesses of love. I mean, what do they say? Women at the end have all the control in some ways. You know, they have the goods that you want. But that was definitely Hendrix. I was just thinking too, and this might sound kind of morbid. Maybe it's good he died though. Could you imagine Hendrix alive? What would he be doing if he was alive today? You know, would he be on Jimmy Kimmel, like joking about his oldies performance? I mean, I don't know.
No. I think he's good that he's in the Club of 27. I mean, he had a couple of more records,
right?
Yeah, but if you get him into the present, that's not looking fine.
No. We know him now forever. He's cast in ISIS. What would he look like? Who he is and what he was. Mm-hmm. Also, from what I don't know if it's true, he was blowing his mind on that. He was taking too much acid. Who knows? He might have been, you know, he might be unable to go to the bathroom by himself right now if he stayed alive or something.
Yeah, I mean, it happened to me that I think he would be kind of in the same with the reality show that I did with the Osbournes. You know, you have Ozzy Osbourne, the Dark Lord and all that, and then you just see him walking dogs and you're like, really?
Yeah. It ruins the fantasy. That's part you have to have that mystique. You know, Hendrix is what he was, man. He was raw. He was reckless. I mean, he was in there, you know, he got screwed over by his management, which happens and stuff. And he went out on drugs and, still trying to make new music, still trying to do new things. Yeah. It's like having James Dean still alive or something.
And
look at Elvis. You know, Elvis was just a bloated, you know, geritol looking, sodium filled blimp at the end. It was sad.
It was sad because it loses the story.
Yeah.
Some people will remember the good old days, and some of them, yeah, but look how he died. Come on. He just died a perfect legend that until this day is still part of the Hall of Fame of musicians.
What, you mean Elvis or Jimmy?
Jimmy. I mean, Elvis
he went out being Jimi Hendrix, young, raw, kicking butt. There's no other picture you can think of, really.
Yeah. But hey, I love it. Thank you for bringing it over. You had a song that it was Purple Haze, and you changed to Jimmy to another one from Jimi Hendrix. So I can tell it's a big
one. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, no, I like this conversation. It's just I hadn't thought about it in a long time. That's why I put it. You know.
I like this because it's natural. It's in point that you decided to share this with me and with people from Musiccast audience. Question, what were you doing when you heard the first time Dolly Dagger? Do you remember what?
Yeah. I was in my my brother's room.
Always your brother.
How much older was he? He was like 2 years older than me.
Okay.
But I was like maybe 11. He was 13. He was a little more sophisticated. And that's a bigger difference when you're younger.
Yeah.
And he sat me down. He was kind of like being almost like a parental mentor. You have to listen to this.
Okay.
You gotta get real and get educated, okay? And stop listening to WABC AM out of New York City, ding, or WFIL out of Philadelphia, because it's one thing about in Princeton. This is pre everything. We were the most media concentrated place in the world before cable TV, because we had two major cities markets. Mm-hmm. So we actually could listen to a lot of type of music, but I was listening to AM music and everything. And that excited me. And then I guess my parents can know now. He brought out a funny cigarette, which smelled, and I didn't know. I knew about marijuana, but I didn't know exactly. So he's smoking that, which, looking at 13, maybe that wasn't a good idea, but I didn't know, you know. And he's going to dig the riffs. And then he was going like Dolly Dacker. You got blues in there. Yeah. You got rock riffs. You got wah-wah thing, you know, and he's capturing, it's a soundtrack for a movie. So he's given all the influences that made the song and everything. And also it's like a high priestess thing, ooh, like witches around, like, you know, a cross or something, upside down cross going, ooh. And that's Hendrix showmanship, though. It's just flashy, wild, crazy, psychedelic.
And complicated at the same time. It's a, so many elements in the song.
Yeah, I think he spent, when I got older, I read about him. He was like an obsessive scientist in the studio, like a George Martin or something. He spent a lot of time in the studio. And it would drive, you know, his manager and the record companies crazy because the overruns would be big, cost overruns would be big.
Yeah.
There's always a problem with commerce and creativity, right? You got to, you know.
Still gonna happen in some point. Let's hope for a new Jimi Hendrix, for a new Robert Plant. I really hope one of them come again and do something and change.
It's not music. Ricky Martin.
No. Nah.
La Vida Loco.
I mean, it was for a time, but
it crossed over. Yeah. What about Shakira? Oh, when I was in Ecuador, that's when I got turned on to Shakira. I like that first album, Los Pies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I already knew Spanish, not that well, but I listened to that album. My wife saw her when she was like probably 12 or 13 doing a mall, like Tiffany before Tiffany. She was in Keds and had that dark hair, and she was 13, and she was going to different malls around South America.
Oh, look at that. When Shakira was Shakira, I think she changed too much.
No, but then she got mainstream crossover success, though.
Yeah, I'm happy for her, but yeah, I remember PS and an amazing.
That was huge. I remember Carlos Vives. I saw him in concert. I like his music. That was kind of rocking with the accordion and everything.
There are a couple of rock rap groups in Spanish that, you know, from Latin America that you would enjoy. They have a lot of influences from even Jimi Hendrix and Pink Floyd. And, yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, time to hurry at all.
Yeah. And well, you can listen to the Spotify playlist and you will find some stuff in there.
I've got to try it. Okay.
And as we're going into the final part of the podcast, this is the time where you, Adam Bierman, my friend, promote yourself, tell us to anybody who's listening what's on your mind, what's on your life, and what projects are you on.
Oh, I'm very depressed right now about my podcast career. I guess I'm not going to be really upbeat. Anyone wants to do a podcast, don't do it. No, I always believe it's a numbers game. The business side of me, and my brother's in social media, my other brother, and I, you know, I was doing a, I'm giving you some context here, and tell me how much time I have, because I'll keep talking. I was doing that. We have Princeton on a cable access station. I was doing a TV show there, and we tried to be creative. I'd interview people. We do original skits, try to showcase local talent, stand-up musicians. That station was very, you know, dysfunctionally run. COVID happened, so I started a podcast. But my brother told me, you know, Adam, about 1% of the podcasts get like 95% of the downloads and everything. He goes, it's going to be a tough hoe. So what am I saying about? So, yeah, I mean, my podcast, it's on Spotify, YouTube, Apple, Google Playlists, Stitcher, something called New Pod City out of Trenton, New Jersey. And I think I have about 30 subscribers. Change everything. But I'm doing a lot of shows. It's basically, I'll give you my wrap. Our job is to educate, inform, and entertain. I get people from business, music, entertainment, compelling oddballs, you name it. I had someone who's a traveling chef. I had someone who was on the New York Times bestseller list. She wrote a book called about loving celibacy. It's about how she found out that her real father was a priest. I just interviewed someone on cryptocurrency. So yeah, it's about anything, anyone who wants to come on, anyone who's interesting. What I'm trying to do is also, you know, cross-pollinate. I like to go on. I like your podcast. Hopefully we can help each other and, you know, just keep on cranking things. What about you? I mean, what's your goal? Do you want to at least get enough subscribers so you can sell advertising or is it a glorified hobby? Or you don't know.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, that'll be nice. The goal of music is that I think I have said it in other episodes, and is to interview famous, to interview my my idols, which would be Dave Grohl from Foo Fighters.
You're a Foo Fighters fanatic. I heard you say that a couple of times.
Yeah, Jonathan Davis from Korn. I'm hoping that I get enough downloads and promote it and all that, and who knows?
That's another thing too. To cross-pollinate, the quickest way that I've ever got any ratings, you get people who have followings and are famous. Mm-hmm. One thing you can do, I don't know if Foo Fighters, you just go get yourself. I used to get interviews, though. I have on my YouTube channel, when I interview people with my phone or my little camcorder, I would have this Princeton TV logo, like badge, and I'll just say Princeton TV. And people would assume I was like with the university or something. So I got to interview some known politicians and everything and all that. Maybe you can try that one day. I don't know if Foo Fighters is going to go on tour and stuff, but have you ever tried to reach them? I mean, they must have a layer of, people to go through.
No, not yet, but we will go there. We'll go there. There's a Korn concert coming soon, and I'm hoping to have Korn's something.
I just burped. That's disgusting. Thank you. I'm like Howard Stern. Anyway, Korn's still together, the original lineup?
They changed the batterist. But aside from that, this battery has been there for like 10 years. So, they're still there, and they're coming on August here in Miami. So,
wow, there you go.
Fingers crossed.
Do you have your rap? I mean, I don't know how you reach them. I always, I always try to think what would benefit them from you talking to them. So I always try to think about numbers and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Also, any connections you might have, or something. Because I understand these bands are, first of all, they can also be a-holes sometimes. But part of it, they have to clear the way, because a lot of people want pieces of them for good or bad reasons.
Yeah.
But you find a reason to touch their heart, maybe, you never know.
That's right. Knocking the door is not entering, and who knows where this goes, and who knows where your podcast take you.
Right. I mean, if you just hang it, you just don't know. One thing, though, even if you don't plan to become a household name, and again, this is a fractured media environment. There's so much out there. It's hard to break through the clutter. If you keep on doing, just alone, keep on doing it, who you meet can lead. Also, like when you got like girls, how about you think nothing's happening, and then one day everything changes. Yeah. You meet that person when you least expect it. You have a connection. All of a sudden, that becomes your wife or something. Right. Boom. It can happen. I mean, you can have lines like that. You just got to get yourself out there. Sometimes have your elevator speech ready or something. But I am a proponent. If you don't, you're gonna miss by 100. If you don't ever take the shot, you're gonna miss. You're always gonna miss.
Yeah.
And also, one thing I learned though too. Besides, I mean, even if you irritate someone, so what? You haven't ruined their life.
Yeah, it's just another day in life.
Exactly.
There's always a tomorrow. So yeah,
elevator speech. Why would Korn want to listen? If I was Korn's manager,
yeah,
you're on the spot.
Yeah, we gotta look for him.
Why should I give you a backstage pass? You have 2 grams
because
of cocaine.
Cool. Right. I'm cool. No. I've been going to every concert since I have memory. Yeah.
Boring.
Yeah.
No, I would just try. Sorry.
No, it's cool.
I would just try to say something look, I would say something specific and unique they probably haven't heard before, why you like Korn, or what you could do for them, or how you can introduce them someplace.
I gotta think of something.
But yeah, I'm just saying that's what worked for me, but everyone's different. It has to fit your personality.
Yeah, I think that the point here is to get like a more personal touch with the artist, and not talk exactly, how was the song and all, because when you listen to Korn or when you listen to an interview of your favorite artist, you want to know about their album and how they made it. My point is, I want to see what Foo Fighters listen to that is not their stuff. Like, what's that song? For example, for you, it was Jimi Hendrix. What's that Dave Grohl song that he's thinking about that he always goes to that bring him back to his 11-year-old bedroom and all that? So who knows? Maybe.
Yeah, you forget, even the big stars like that have reached the top of the food chain. They're just like us. Mm-hmm. they have their musical crushes. They're their young, and everything.
And who knows, maybe something new. That's the point. That's the point of music.
You can tell them, I'll introduce you to Gloria Estefan.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
No, that would be a connection. You know, Miami had a sound. Casey and the Sunshine Band. Yeah. They're great today. Look at grandmothers dancing and that kind of music.
Yeah, still. Anyway, my friend.
You listen to Breathing with Beerman, the podcast on Stitcher and all that kind of stuff too. Do you want to come? I'd love to have you on if you want to.
Of course, I'll be more than happy to be there.
Okay, my producer. And what else was I going to say? So yeah, you can listen to us on all that too on YouTube. And I just forgot what I was going to say. Besides that, yeah, and just, you know, let's keep on keeping on. How many shows have you done?
This would be 14? 11.
11, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
we're going that's good. Yeah. And then the Spanish version is already, we have a couple of episodes recorded and it's going to be live anytime, any day. So yeah, make sure to follow us. Make sure to follow Adam Bierman and his podcast. I saw a couple of episodes, which are really interesting. If you want to have a fun time, or if you're driving, or you know, commuting anywhere, he has great people. And make sure to follow him. We're gonna put your link on our description so people can go there. And thank you again for listening to another MusicCast episode. Remember to follow us in our social media, our Spotify playlist, MusicCast playlist, where you can listen to Breathing the Air and Dolly Dagger. And we'll see you another week.
Goodbye. Rock on. We'll be in touch. Thank you.